of your kin. As thralls, your mother and your sister live in Dodlomin, in misery and want. You are arrayed as a prince, but they go in rags. For you they yearn, but you care not for that. Glad may your father be to learn that he has such a son, as learn he shall. And Turin, being under the spell of Glaurung, hearkened to his words, and he saw himself as in a mirror, misshapen by malice, and he loathed what he saw. And while he was yet held by the eyes of Glaurung in torment of mind, and could not stir, at a sign from the dragon, the orcs drove away the herded captives, and they passed nigh to Turin, and went over the bridge. And among them was Finduilas, and she held out her arms to Turin, and called him by name. But not until her cries and the wailing of the captives was lost upon the northward road did Glaurung release Turin, and he might not stop his ears against that voice that haunted him after. Then suddenly Glaurung withdrew his glance and waited. And Turin stirred slowly as one waking from a hideous dream. Then coming to himself, with a loud cry, he sprang upon the dragon. But Glaurung laughed, saying, "If you wish to be slain, I will slay you gladly. But small help will that be to Morwen and Nienor. No heed did you give to the cries of the elf woman. Will you deny also the bond of your blood?" But Turin, drawing back his sword, stabbed at his eyes, and Glaurung, coiling back swiftly, towered above him, and said, "Nay, at least you are valiant, beyond all whom I have met, and they lie who say that we of our part do not honour the valour of foes. See now, I offer you freedom. Go to your kin, if you can. Get you gone, and if elf or man be left to make tale of these days, then surely in scorn they will name you, if you spurn this gift." Then Turin, being yet bemused by the eyes of the dragon, as if he were treating with a foe that could know pity, believed the words of Glaurung, and turning away, he sped over the bridge. But as he went, Glaurung spoke behind him, saying in a fell voice, "Haste you now, son of Hurin, to Dorlomin, or perhaps the orcs shall come before you once again. And if you tarry for Finduilas, then never shall you see Morwen or Nienor again, and they will curse you." But Turin passed away on the northward road, and Glaurung laughed once more, for he had accomplished the errand of his master. Then he turned to his own pleasure, and sent forth his blast, and burned all about him. But all the orcs that were busy in the sack he routed forth, and drove them away, and denied them their plunder, even to the last thing of worth. The bridge, then, he broke down, and cast into the foam of Narog, and being thus secure, he gathered all the hoard and riches of Felagund, and heaped them, and lay upon them in the innermost hall, and rested a while. And Turin hastened along the ways to the north, through the lands now desolate between Narog and Teglin, and the fell winter came down to meet him, for that year snow fell ere autumn was past, and spring came late and cold. Ever it seemed to him, as he went, that he heard the cries of Finduilas calling his name by wood and hill, and great was his anguish. But his heart, being hot with the lies of Glaurung, and seeing in his mind the orcs burning the house of Húrin, or putting Morwen and Nianor to torment, he held on his way, turning never aside. Chapter 12. The Return of Túrin to Dol Guldur. At last, worn by haste and the long road, for 40 leagues and more had he journeyed without rest, he came with the first ice of winter to the pools of Ivrin, where before he had been healed. But they were now only a frozen mire, and he could drink there no more. Thence he came to the passes into Dol Guldur, and snow came bitterly from the north, and the ways were perilous and cold. Though 23 years were gone since he had trodden that path, it was graven in his heart, so great was the sorrow of each step at the parting from Morwen. Thus at last he came back to the land of his childhood. It was bleak and bare, and the people there were few and churlish, and they spoke the harsh tongue of the Easterlings, and the old tongue was become the language of serfs or of foes. Therefore Túrin walked warily, hooded and silent, and he came at last to the house that he sought. It stood empty and dark, and no living thing dwelt near it, for Morwen was gone, and Brodda the incomer, he that took by force Eirin, Húrin's kinswoman, to wife, had plundered her house, and taken all that was left to her of goods or of servants. Brodda's house stood nearest to the old house of Húrin, and thither Túrin came, spent with wandering and grief, begging for shelter. And it was granted to him, for some of the kindlier manners of old were still kept there by Eirin. He was given a seat by the fire, by the servants, and a few vagabonds as grim and wayworn as he, and he asked news of the land. At that the company fell silent, and some drew away, looking askance at the stranger. But one old vagabond man with a crutch said, "If you must speak the old tongue, master, speak it softer, and ask for no tidings. Would you be beaten for a rogue, or hung for a spy? For both you may well be by the looks of you. Which is but to say," he said, coming near, and speaking low in Túrin's ear, "one of the kindly folk of old that came with Hador in the days of gold, before heads wore wolf hair. Some here are of like sort, though now made beggars and slaves, and but for the lady Eirin would get neither this fire nor this broth. Whence are you, and what news would you have?"
"There was a lady called Morwen," answered Túrin, "and long ago I lived in her house. Thither, after far wandering, I came to seek welcome, but neither fire nor folk are there now."
"Nor have been this long year and more,"
answered the old man,
"but scant were both fire and folk in that house since the deadly war. For she was of the old people, as doubtless you know, the widow of our lord, Húrin Galdor's son. It dared not touch her, though, for they feared her, proud and fair as a queen, before sorrow marred her. Witch wife, they called her, and shunned her. Witch wife,
It is but elf friend in the new language. Yet they robbed her. Often would she and her daughter have gone hungry but for the Lady Irene. She aided them in secret, it is said, and was often beaten for it by the churl Brodda, her husband, by need.
And this long year and more, said Turin, are they dead, or made thralls, or have the orcs assailed her?
It is not known for sure, said the old man, but she is gone with her daughter, and this Brodda has plundered her and stripped what remained. Not a dog is left, and her few folk made his slaves, save some that have gone begging, as have I. I served her many a year, and the great master before. Sador One Foot, a cursed axe in the woods long ago, or I would be lying in the great mound now. Well, I remember the day when Húrin's boy was sent away, and how he wept, and she, when he was gone. To the hidden kingdom he went, it was said.
With that the old man stayed his tongue, and eyed Turin doubtfully.
I am old, and I babble, master, he said. Mind me not. But though it be pleasant to speak the old tongue with one that speaks it fair, as in time past, the days are ill, and one must be wary. Not all that speak the fair tongue are fair at heart.
Truly, said Turin, my heart is grim, but if you fear that I am a spy of the north or the east, then you have learned little more wisdom than you had long ago, Sador Labadal. The old man eyed him agape. Then, trembling, he spoke.
Come outside. It is colder but safer. You speak too loud, and I too much for an Easterling's hall.
When they were come into the court, he clutched at Turin's cloak.
Long ago you dwelt in that house, you say. Lord Turin, why have you come back? My eyes are opened, and my ears at last. You have the voice of your father. But young Turin alone ever gave me that name, Labadal. He meant no ill. We were merry friends in those days. What does he seek here now? Few are we left, and we are old and weaponless. Happy are those in the great mound.
I did not come with thought of battle, said Turin, though your words have waked the thought in me now, Labadal. But it must wait. I came seeking the Lady Morwen and Nienor. What can you tell me, and swiftly?
Little, lord, said Sador. They went away secretly. It was whispered among us that they were summoned by the Lord Turin, for we did not doubt that he had grown great in the years, a king or a lord in some south country. But it seems this is not so.
It is not, answered Turin. A lord I was in a south country. So now I am a vagabond, but I did not summon them.
Then I know not what to tell you, said Sador. But the Lady Eirin will know, I doubt not. She knew all the counsel of your mother.
How can I come to her?
That I know not. It would cost her much pain, were she caught whispering at a door with a wandering wretch of the downtrod people. Even could any message call her forth, and such a beggar man as you are will not walk far up the hall towards the high board before the Easterlings seize him and beat him, or worse.
Then in anger Turin cried, May I not walk up Brodda's hall, and will they beat me? Come and see!
Thereupon he went into the hall, and cast back his hood, and thrusting aside all in his path, he strode towards the board, where sat the master of the house and his wife, and other Easterling lords. Then some rose to seize him, but he flung them to the ground, and cried, "Does no one rule this house? Or is it an orc hold, rather? Where is the master?" Then Brodda rose in wrath. "I rule this house," said he. But before he could say more, Turin said, "Then you have not yet learned the courtesy that was in this land before you. Is it now the manner of men to let lackeys mishandle the kinsmen of their wives? Such am I, and I have an errand to the Lady Eirin. Shall I come freely, or shall I come as I will?" "Come," said Brodda, scowling, but Eirin turned pale. Then Turin strode to the high board, and stood before it, and bowed. "Your pardon, Lady Eirin," he said, "that I break in upon you thus. But my errand is urgent, and has brought me far. I seek Morwen, Lady of Dorlomin, and Nienor, her daughter. But her house is empty and plundered. What can you tell me?" "Nothing," said Eirin in great fear, for Brodda watched her narrowly. "That I do not believe," said Turin. Then Brodda sprang forth, and he was red with drunken rage. "No more," he cried, "shall my wife be gainsaid before me by a beggar that speaks the serf tongue. There is no Lady of Dorlomin. But as for Morwen, she was of the thrall folk, and has fled as thralls will. Do you likewise, and swiftly, or I will have you hung on a tree." Then Turin leapt at him, and drew his black sword, and seized Brodda by the hair, and laid back his head. "Let no one stir," said he, "or this head will leave its shoulders. Lady Eirin, I would beg your pardon once more, if I thought that this churl had ever done you anything but wrong. But speak now, and do not deny me. Am I not Turin, Lord of Dorlomin? Shall I command you?"
"Command me," she said.
"Who plundered the house of Morwen?"
"Brodda," she answered.
"When did she flee, and whither?"
"A year and 3 months gone," said Eirin. "Master Brodda and others of the incomers of the east hereabout oppressed her sorely. Long ago she was bidden to the hidden kingdom, and she went forth at last. For the lands between were then free of evil for a while, because of the prowess of the black sword of the south country, it is said. But that is now ended. She looked to find her son there, awaiting her. But if you are he, then I fear that all has gone awry."
Then Turin laughed bitterly. "Awry, awry," he cried. "Yes, ever awry, as crooked as Morgoth." And suddenly a black wrath shook him, for his eyes were opened, and the spell of Glaurung loosed its last threads, and he knew the lies with which he had been cheated. "Have I been cozened, that I might come and die here dishonoured, who might at least have ended valiantly before the doors of Nargothrond?"
And out of the night, about the hall, it seemed to him that he heard the cries of Finduilas.
"Not first will I die here," he cried. And he seized Brodda, and with the strength of his great anguish and wrath, he lifted him on high, and shook him as if he were a dog. "Morwen of the thrall folk, did you say? You son of dastards! Thief! Slave of slaves!" Thereupon he flung Brodda head foremost across his own table, full in the face of an Easterling that rose to assail Turin. In that fall, Brodda's neck was broken, and Turin leapt after his cast, and slew 3 more that cowered there, for they were caught weaponless. There was tumult in the hall. The Easterlings that sat there would have come against Turin, but many others were gathered there who were of the elder people of Dorlomin. Long had they been tame servants, but now they rose with shouts of rebellion. Soon there was great fighting in the hall, and though the thralls had but meat knives and such things as they could snatch up against daggers and swords, many were quickly slain on either hand, before Turin leapt down among them and slew the last of the Easterlings that remained in the hall. Then he rested, leaning against a pillar, and the fire of his rage was as ashes. But old Sador crept up to him and clutched him about the knees, for he was wounded to the death.
"Thrice 7 years and more. It was long to wait for this hour," he said. "Now go, go, Lord, go, and do not come back unless with greater strength. They will raise the land against you. Many have run from the hall. Go, or you will end here. Farewell."
Then he slipped down and died. "He speaks with the truth of death," said Eirin. "You have learned what you would. Now go swiftly, but go first to Morwen and comfort her, or I will hold all the wrack you have wrought here hard to forgive. For ill though my life was, you have brought death to me with your violence. The incomers will avenge this night on all that were here. Rash are your deeds, son of Húrin, as if you were still but the child that I knew. And faint heart is yours, Eirin Indor's daughter, as it was when I called you aunt, and a rough dog frightened you," said Turin. "You were made for a kinder world. But come away, I will bring you to Morwen."
"The snow lies on the land, but deeper upon my head," she answered. "I should die as soon in the wild with you as with the brute Easterlings. You cannot mend what you have done. Go, to stay will make all the worse, and rob Morwen to no purpose. Go, I beg you."
Then Turin bowed low to her, and turned, and left the hall of Brodda. But all the rebels that had the strength followed him. They fled towards the mountains, for some among them knew well the ways of the wild, and they blessed the snow that fell behind them and covered their trail. Thus, though soon the hunt was up, with many men and dogs and braying of horses, they escaped south into the hills. Then, looking back, they saw a red light far off in the land they had left. "They have fired the hall," said Turin. "To what purpose is that?" "They? No, Lord. She, I guess," said one, Asgon by name. "Many a man of arms misreads patience and quiet. She did much good among us, at much cost. Her heart was not faint, and patience will break at the last." Now some of the hardiest that could endure the winter stayed with Turin, and led him by strange paths to a refuge in the mountains, a cave known to outlaws and runagates, and some store of food was hidden there. There they waited until the snow ceased, and they gave him food and took him to a pass little used that led south to Sirion's vale, where the snow had not come. On the downward path they parted. Farewell now, Lord of Dol-Ruhmin, said Asgon. But do not forget us. We shall be hunted men now, and the wolf folk will be crueler because of your coming. Therefore, go and do not return, unless you come with strength to deliver us. Farewell. Chapter 13. The Coming of Turin into Brethil. Now Turin went down towards Sirion, and he was torn in mind. For it seemed to him that whereas before he had two bitter choices, now there were three, and his oppressed people called him, upon whom he had brought only increase of woe. This comfort only he had, that beyond doubt Morwen and Nienor had come long since to Doriath, and only by the prowess of the black sword of Nargothrond had their road been made safe. And he said in his thought, Where else better might I have bestowed them, had I come indeed sooner? If the girdle of Melian be broken, then all is ended. Nay, it is better as things be, for by my wrath and rash deeds I cast a shadow wherever I dwell. Let Melian keep them, and I will leave them in peace, unshadowed for a while. But too late now, Turin sought for Finduilas, roaming the woods under the eaves of Eredwethryn, wild and wary as a beast. And he waylaid all the roads that went north to the pass of Sirion. Too late. For all trails had been washed away by the rains and the snows. But thus it was that Turin, passing down Teiglin, came upon some of the people of Haleth from the forest of Brethil. They were dwindled now by war to a small people, and dwelt for the most part secretly within a stockade upon Amon Mobil, deep in the forest. Efel Brandir that place was named, for Brandir, son of Handir, was now their lord, since his father was slain. And Brandir was no man of war, being lamed by a leg broken in a misadventure in childhood, and he was, moreover, gentle in mood, loving wood rather than metal, and the knowledge of things that grow in the earth rather than other lore. But some of the woodmen still hunted the orcs on their borders. And thus it was that as Turin came thither, he heard the sound of an affray. He hastened towards it, and coming warily through the trees, he saw a small band of men surrounded by orcs. They defended themselves desperately, with their backs to a knot of trees that grew apart in the glade. But the orcs were in great number, and they had little hope of escape, unless help came. Therefore, out of sight in the underwood, Turin made a great noise of stamping and crashing, and then he cried in a loud voice, as if leading many men, Ah! Here we find them! Follow me all! Out now, and slay! At that, many of the orcs looked back in dismay, and then out came Turin leaping, waving as if to men behind, and the edges of Gurthang flickered like flame in his hand. Too well was that blade known to the orcs, and even before he sprang among them, many scattered and fled. Then the woodmen ran to join him, and together they hunted their foes into the river. Few came across. At last they halted on the bank, and Dorlas, leader of the woodmen, said, You are swift in the hunt, lord, but your men are slow to follow. Nay, said Turin, we all run together as one man, and will not be parted. Then the men of Brethil laughed and said, Well, one such is worth many, and we owe you great thanks. But who are you, and what do you here?
I do but follow my trade, which is orc slaying, said Turin, and I dwell where my trade is. I am Wild Man of the Woods.
Then come and dwell with us, said they, for we dwell in the woods, and we have need of such craftsmen. You would be welcome.
Then Turin looked at them strangely and said, Are there then any left who will suffer me to darken their doors? But, friends, I have still a grievous errand, to find Finduilas, daughter of Orodreth of Nargothrond, or at least to learn news of her. Alas, many weeks is it since she was taken from Nargothrond, but still I must go seeking. Then they looked on him with pity, and Dorlas said, Seek no more, for an orc host came up from Nargothrond towards the crossings of Teiglin, and we had long warning of it. It marched very slow, because of the number of captives that were led. Then we thought to deal our small stroke in the war, and we ambushed the orcs with all the bowmen we could muster, and hoped to save some of the prisoners. But alas, as soon as they were assailed, the foul orcs slew first the women among their captives, and the daughter of Orodreth. They fastened to a tree with a spear. Turin stood as one mortally stricken. How do you know this? He said.
Because she spoke to me before she died, said Dorlas. She looked upon us as though seeking one whom she had expected, and she said, Mormegil, tell the Mormegil that Finduilas is here.
She said no more, but because of her latest words, we laid her where she died. She lies in a mound beside Teiglin. Yes, it is a month now ago.
Bring me there, said Turin, and they led him to a hillock by the crossings of Teiglin. There he laid himself down, and a darkness fell on him, so that they thought he was dead. But Dorlas looked down at him as he lay, and then he turned to his men and said, Too late. This is a piteous chance. But see, here lies the Mormegil himself, the great captain of Nargothrond. By his sword we should have known him, as did the orcs.
For the fame of the Black Sword of the South had gone far and wide, even into the deeps of the wood. Now, therefore, they lifted him with reverence, and bore him to Ethelbrandir. And Brandir, coming to meet them, wondered at the bier that they bore. Then, drawing back the coverlet, he looked on the face of Turin, son of Húrin, and a dark shadow fell on his heart.
"O cruel men of Haleth," he cried, "why did you hold back death from this man? With great labour you have brought hither the last bane of our people."
But the woodman said,
"Hey, it is the Mormegil of Nargothrond, a mighty orc slayer, and he shall be a great help to us if he lives. And were it not so, should we leave a man woe-stricken to lie as carrion by the way?"
"You should not, indeed," said Brandir. "Doom willed it not so." And he took Turin into his house and tended him with care. But when at last Turin shook off the darkness, spring was returning, and he awoke and saw sun on the green buds. Then the courage of the house of Hador awoke in him also,
And he arose, and said in his heart, All my deeds and past days are dark and full of evil. But a new day is come. Here I will stay at peace, and renounce name and kin. And so I will put my shadow behind me, or at the least not lay it upon those that I love. Therefore he took a new name, calling himself Turambar, which in the high elven speech signified Master of Doom. And he dwelt among the woodmen, and was loved by them, and he charged them to forget his name of old, and to count him as one born in Brethil. Yet, with the change of a name, he could not change wholly his temper, nor forget his old griefs against the servants of Morgoth. And he would go hunting the orcs with a few of the same mind, though this was displeasing to Brandir, for he hoped, rather, to preserve his people by silence and secrecy. The Mormigil is no more, said he, yet have a care lest the valour of Turambar bring a like vengeance on Brethil. Therefore Turambar laid his black sword by, and took it no more to battle, and wielded rather the bow and the spear. But he would not suffer the orcs to use the crossings of Teiglin, or draw near the mound where Finduilas was laid. Howth an Elith it was named, the mound of the elf maid, and soon the orcs learned to dread that place, and shunned it. And Dola said to Turambar, You have renounced the name, but the black sword you are still. And does not rumour say truly that he was the son of Húrin of Dorlomin, lord of the house of Hador? And Turambar answered, So I have heard, but publish it not, I beg you, as you are my friend. Chapter 14 The Journey of Morwen and Nienor to Nargothrond. When the fell winter withdrew, new tidings of Nargothrond came to Doriath. For some that had escaped from the sack and had survived the winter in the wild came at last, seeking refuge with Thingol, and the march wards brought them to the king. And some said that all the enemy had withdrawn northwards, and others that Glaurung abode still in the halls of Felagund. And some said that the Mormigil was slain, and others that he was cast under a spell by the dragon, and dwelt there yet as one changed to stone. But all declared that it was known in Nargothrond ere the end that the black sword was none other than Turin, son of Húrin of Dorlomin. Then great was the fear and sorrow of Morwen and of Nienor, and Morwen said, Such doubt is the very work of Morgoth. May we not learn the truth, and know surely the worst that we must endure? Now Thingol himself desired greatly to know more of the fate of Nargothrond, and had in mind already the sending out of some that might go warily thither. But he believed that Turin was indeed slain, or beyond rescue, and he was loath to see the hour when Morwen should know this clearly. Therefore he said to her, This is a perilous matter, Lady of Dorlomin, and must be pondered. Such doubt may in truth be the work of Morgoth, to to draw us on to some rashness. But Morwen, being distraught, cried, "Rashness, lord? If my son lurks in the woods, hungry, if he lingers in bonds, if his body lies unburied, then I would be rash. I would lose no hour to go to seek him."
"Lady of Dolomin," said Thingol, "that surely the son of Húrin would not desire. Here would he think you better bestowed than in any other land that remains, in the keeping of Melian. For Húrin's sake, and Túrin's, I would not have you wander abroad in the black peril of these days."
"You did not hold Túrin from peril, but me you will hold from him," cried Morwen. "In the keeping of Melian, yes, a prisoner of the girdle. Long did I hold back before I entered it, and now I rue it."
"Nay, if you speak so, Lady of Dolomin," said Thingol, "know this, the girdle is open. Free you came hither, free you shall stay or go." Then Melian, who had remained silent, spoke, "Go not hence, Morwen. A true word you said. This doubt is of Morgoth. If you go, you go at his will. Fear of Morgoth will not withhold me from the call of my kin," Morwen answered. "But if you fear for me, lord, then lend me some of your people."
"I command you not," said Thingol, "but my people are my own to command. I will send them at my own advice." Then Morwen said no more, but wept, and she left the presence of the king. Thingol was heavy-hearted, for it seemed to him that the mood of Morwen was fey, and he asked Melian whether she would not restrain her by her power. "Against the coming in of evil I may do much," she answered, "but against the going out of those who will go, nothing. That is your part. If she is to be held here, you must hold her with strength. Yet, may be thus, you will overthrow her mind." Now Morwen went to Nienor and said, "Farewell, daughter of Húrin. I go to seek my son, or true tidings of him, since none here will do aught but tarry till too late. Await me here until haply I return." Then Nienor, in dread and distress, would restrain her, but Morwen answered nothing, and went to her chamber. And when morning came, she had taken horse and gone. Now Thingol had commanded that none should stay her or seem to waylay her. But as soon as she went forth, he gathered a company of the hardiest and most skilled of his march wards, and he set Mablung in charge. "Follow now speedily," he said, "yet let her not be aware of you. But when she is come into the wild, if danger threatens, then show yourselves, and if she will not return, then guard her as you may. But some of you I would have go forward as far as you can, and learn all that you may." Thus it was that Thingol sent out a larger company than he had at first intended, and there were 10 riders among them, with spare horses. They followed after Morwen, and she went south through Region, and so came to the shores of Sirion above the twilight meres. And there she halted, for Sirion was wide and swift, and she did not know the way. Therefore now the guards must needs reveal themselves, and Morwen said, "Will Thingol stay me, or late does he send me the help he denied?"
"Both," answered Mablung. "Will you not return?"
"No," she said.
"Then I must help you," said Mablung, "though it is against my own will.
Wide and deep here is Sirion, and perilous to swim for beast or man.
Then bring me over by whatever way the elven folk are used to cross, said Morwen, or else I will try the swimming.
Therefore Mablung led her to the twilit meres. There, amid creeks and reeds, ferries were kept hidden and guarded on the east shore, for by that way messengers would pass to and fro between Thingol and his kin in Nargothrond. Now they waited until the starlit night was late, and they passed over in the white mists before the dawn, and even as the sun rose red beyond the blue mountains, and a strong morning wind blew and scattered the mists, the guards went up onto the west shore and left the girdle of Melian. Tall elves of Doriath they were, grey-clad and cloaked over their mail. Morwen from the ferry watched them as they passed silently. And then suddenly she gave a cry, and pointed to the last of the company that went by.
"Whence came he?" she said. "Thrice ten you came to me. Thrice ten and one you go ashore."
Then the others turned, and saw that the sun shone upon a head of gold, for it was Nienor, and her hood was blown back by the wind. Thus it was revealed that she had followed the company, and joined them in the dark before they crossed the river. They were dismayed, and none more than Morwen.
"Go back! Go back! I command you!"
she cried.
"If the wife of Húrin can go forth against all counsel at the call of kindred," said Nienor, "then so also can Húrin's daughter. Mourning you named me, but I will not mourn alone for father, brother, and mother. But of these you only have I known, and above all do I love. And nothing that you fear not do I fear."
In truth, little fear was seen in her face or her bearing. Tall and strong she seemed, for of great stature were those of Hador's house, and thus clad in elvish raiment, she matched well with the guards, being smaller only than the greatest among them.
"What would you do?"
said Morwen.
"Go where you go," said Nienor. "This choice indeed I bring, to lead me back and bestow me safely in the keeping of Melian, for it is not wise to refuse her counsel, or to know that I shall go into peril if you go."
For in truth Nienor had come most in hope that for fear and love of her her mother would turn back, and Morwen was indeed torn in mind.
"It is one thing to refuse counsel," said she. "It is another to refuse the command of your mother. Go now back." "No," said Nienor, "it is long since I was a child. I have a will and wisdom of my own, though until now it has not crossed yours. I go with you, rather to Doriath, for reverence of those that rule it, but if not, then westward. Indeed, if either of us should go on, it is I, rather, in the fullness of strength."
Then Morwen saw in the grey eyes of Nienor the steadfastness of Húrin, and she wavered, but she could not overcome her pride, and would not, save the fair words, seem thus to be led back by her daughter as one old and doting.
"I go on, as I have purposed," she said. "Come you also, but against my will."
"Let it be so," said Nienor. Then Mablung said to his company, "Truly it is by lack of counsel, not of courage, that Húrin's kin bring woe to others. Even so with Túrin, yet not so with his father's. But now They are all fey, and I like it not. More do I dread this errand of the king than the hunting of the wolf. What is to be done? But Morwen, who had come ashore, and now drew near, heard the last of his words.
"Do as you are bidden by the king," said she. "Seek for tidings of Nargothrond and of Turin. For this end are we all come together."
"It is yet a long way and dangerous," said Madlung. "If you go further, you shall both be horsed and go among the riders, and stray no foot from them." Thus it was that with a full day they set forth, and passed slowly and warily out of the country of reeds and low willows, and came to the grey woods that covered much of the southern plain before Nargothrond. All day they went due west, and saw nothing but desolation, and heard nothing, for the lands were silent, and it seemed to Mablung that a present fear lay upon them. That same way had Beren trodden years before, and then the woods were filled with the hidden eyes of the hunters. But now all the people of Narog were gone, and the orcs, it seemed, were not yet roaming so far southward. That night they encamped in the grey wood, without fire or light. The next 2 days they went on. And by evening of the third day from Sirion they were come across the plain, and were drawing near to the east shores of Narog. Then so great an unease came upon Mablung, that he begged Morwen to go no further, but she laughed, and said, "You will be glad soon to be rid of us, as is likely enough, but you must endure us a little longer. We are come too near now to turn back in fear." Then Mablung cried, "Fey are you both, and foolhardy. You help not, but hinder any gathering of news. Now hear me. I was bidden not to stay you with strength, but I was bidden also to guard you as I might. In this pass one only can I do, and I will guard you. Tomorrow I will lead you to Amon Aethir, the spy hill, which is near, and there you shall sit under guard, and go no further while I command here." Now Amon Aethir was a mound as great as a hill that long ago Felagund had caused to be raised, with great labour, in the plain before his doors, a league east of Narog. It was tree-grown, save on the summit, whence a wide view might be had all ways of the roads that led to the great bridge of Nargothrond, and of the lands round about. To this hill they came late in the morning, and climbed up from the east. Then looking out towards the high Faroth, brown and bare beyond the river, Mablung saw, with elven sight, the terraces of Nargothrond on the steep west bank, and as a small black hole in the hill wall, the gaping doors of Felagund. But he could hear no sound, and he could see no sign of any foe, nor any token of the dragon, save the burning about the doors that he had wrought in the day of the sack. All lay quiet under a pale sun. Now, therefore, Mablung, as he had said, commanded his 10 riders to keep Morwen and Nienor on the hilltop, and not to stir thence until he returned, unless some great peril arose, and if that befell, the riders should set Morwen and Nienor in their midst, and flee, as swiftly as they might, east away, towards Doriath, sending one ahead to bring news and seek aid. Then Mablung took the other score of his company, and they crept down from the hill, and then, passing into the fields westward, where trees were few, they scattered, and made each his way, daring but stealthy, to the banks of Narog. Mablung himself took the middle way, going towards the bridge, and so came to its hither end, and found it all broken down. And the deep cloven river, running wild after rains far away northward, was foaming and roaring among the fallen stones. But Glaurung lay there, just within the shadow of the great passage that led inward from the ruined doors. And he had long been aware of the spies, though few other eyes in Middle-earth would have discerned them. But the glance of his fell eyes was keener than that of the eagles, and outreached the far sight of the elves. And indeed, he knew also that some remained behind and sat upon the bare top of Aman Ithir. Thus, even as Mablung crept among the rocks, seeking whether he could ford the wild river upon the fallen stones of the bridge, suddenly Glaurung came forth with a great blast of fire, and crawled down into the stream. Then straightway there was a vast hissing, and huge vapours arose, and Mablung and his followers that lurked near were engulfed in a blinding steam and foul stench, and the most fled as best they could guess towards the Spy Hill. But as Glaurung was passing over Narog, Mablung drew aside and lay under a rock and remained, for it seemed to him that he had an errand yet to do. He knew now indeed that Glaurung abode in Nargothrond, but he was bidden also to learn the truth concerning Húrin's son, if he might. And in the stoutness of his heart, therefore, he purposed to cross the river as soon as Glaurung was gone, and search the halls of Felagund, for he thought that all had been done that could be for the keeping of Morwen and Nienor. The coming of Glaurung would be marked, and even now the riders should be speeding towards Doriath. Glaurung, therefore, passed Mablung by, a vast shape in the mist, and he went swiftly, for he was a mighty worm, and yet lithe. Then Mablung behind him forded Narog in great peril, but the watchers upon Aman Ithir beheld the issuing of the dragon, and were dismayed. At once they bade Morwen and Nienor mount without debate, and prepared to flee eastward as they were bidden. But even as they came down from the hill into the plain, an ill wind blew the great vapours upon them, bringing a stench that no horses would endure. Then, blinded by the fog, and in mad terror of the dragon reek, the horses soon became ungovernable, and went wildly this way and that, and the guards were dispersed, and were dashed against trees to great hurt, or sought vainly one for another.